You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Goldhawk Fights Back for You on AM 740 Zoomer Radio. Goldhawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740 Zoomer Radio.
You know, we talk a lot about auto insurance, even if we don't understand the concept too well from time to time. It's pretty complicated business, especially if you have an accident and then have to try to figure out how you will be compensated. And if it's an accident involving personal injury, how you will be covered there as well. Just popping into my studio a few minutes ago, Pat Brown. He's an Ontario trial lawyer. He specializes in personal injury law. He's a partner at McLeish Orlando LLP, and in fact is the past president, I believe, of the Ontario Trial Lawyers Association. Now, you have banded together. Pat, first off, welcome. Thank you for coming into my little cool studio here today.
Thanks, Dale, for having me and dealing with this issue.
You have banded together with a number of other people, the trial lawyers have, to warn us all about what seems to be coming down the insurance pipe in terms of some changes to coverage. Can you give us the overview of that to start, please?
Sure. Dale, as you've indicated, we really do have one of the most complicated systems in North America. Some would say it's more complicated than our Tax Act. But what's coming down the system, you have to put into the context of what happened in September of 2010. There had been a so-called crisis, and obviously people were paying premiums, and the Ontario government certainly wanted to reduce the amount of premiums that the average consumer was paying for auto insurance. And at that point in time, the Insurance Bureau of Canada, as well as the government and other stakeholders, had put together a package. And at that time, what they did is people have benefits that are available when they are in an accident. Those benefits help them get better, and they're called medical and rehabilitation benefits.
Yeah.
They also have benefits so that they have somebody to provide caregiving for them and some income replacement benefits. Those are called no-fault benefits. And what happened in September of 2010, there was a call to reduce the amount of premiums, and therefore what the government did was reduce the amount of benefits.
They drastically reduced it.
So they took, for instance, in what's called a more non-catastrophic case, somebody had $100,000 in medical and rehabilitation benefits for physiotherapists and occupational therapists, and they slashed it in half, and they put it at $50,000. And then they got rid of the housekeeping benefit altogether for those types of injuries. And the idea was that we would reduce the amount of benefits that are available for those more minor type of injuries, the whiplash. Yeah. We'll try to, in fact, get those out of the system, or at least reduce the benefits that are involved in that.
There had been some fraud involved in that, to be fair, too.
Sure.
And I think they were trying to deal with that to a certain extent.
And they did, in fact, by reducing the benefits the way they did. It was quite a dramatic reduction. They even put in a minor injury guideline, which meant on minor injuries, there was only $3,500.
Okay. So, now, I remember distinctly at the time talking to some insurance company people, and they assured me, here's what the assurance went like: we're changing the coverage, backing off on the coverage in terms of these so-called minor accidents, but was always mentioned, the catastrophic coverage would remain the same. Now there's a proposal where the catastrophic coverage would not remain the same.
Dale, I was there for the Ontario Trial Lawyers Association back at that point in time, and when the pitch was made is we'll reduce these minor injury claims so that the people who are more catastrophically would have the money available to them.
That's exactly what they said, yes.
And then since that time, we've all of a sudden now seen a dramatic increase in the profitability of the insurance industry. Nothing wrong with insurance companies being profitable, but there has to be a balance. And recently, in the first quarter of 2012, we've seen almost record profits in some of the largest companies. And at the same time, however, they're putting a pitch now to reduce the number of people who are catastrophically injured.
In other words, raise the threshold for coverage. Is that the idea?
That's right. Raise the bar. Yeah. Some could consider it lowering the bar.
I guess.
Who's going to be catastrophic, and fewer people will get under it. And these are the more significant injuries out there.
Now, where does this come? First off, I hate to interrupt you, but where does this come from? It comes from an expert panel that is advising the set up by the Financial Services Commission of Ontario. Is that where it originally starts?
Correct.
Okay. And who is this expert panel?
It's headed by different individuals, but certainly people in the medical rehab community, or at least there's the alliance of the community of medical and rehabilitation providers that have gotten together. They indicate that there are certain individuals there that are more connected to the Insurance Bureau of Canada than expert panels.
So this is insurance coverage oriented, as it were, to a certain extent.
Some certainly have suggested that.
Yeah. So what will it mean now? How will they? Do we know how they will raise or lower, depending upon how you want to describe this, that threshold for catastrophic coverage?
From the context of catastrophic coverage, so if somebody is catastrophically injured, it means that they have $1 million available in medical and rehabilitation benefits.
That's the limit now, $1 million.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And they have another $1 million available in attended care, so people can come and help them get dressed and bathe and do the essential caregiving
service. That's $2 million.
That's $2 million. If you meet the catastrophic definition, then you have access to those type of benefits.
Right.
But remember, you only receive those benefits if you're able to prove that you need those benefits. Mm-hmm. So it's not a windfall, just because if you're deemed catastrophic, it doesn't mean all of a sudden you get this windfall of $2 million.
Well, no. Who does the deeming?
Well, the deeming is a legislative, what is catastrophic? And that's where they're attacking now.
Yeah,
so this expert panel's come back and said, we want to change that definition, and based on our review and based on the alliance of the medical rehab providers that have aligned together against this, they believe that approximately 30 to 40% of those people that are now found catastrophic will be taken out of the system.
Do you believe that's is that a legitimate claim from your point of view, from the work you do in personal injury?
Absolutely. We have, for instance, the Court of Appeal of Ontario has said when you're determining whether or not somebody is catastrophically impaired, and you have to meet what's called a 55% whole body impairment, they've said that you should take in not only the physical impairments, but the psychological impairments as well, and you should combine them.
Yeah.
What's happened now with this expert panel is they say, no, there should not be any combining of physical and psychological injuries. So people only get assessed on the physical injury, and the psychological injury, which includes pain, doesn't get assessed, and they'll fall below that 55% marker.
But that's counter to what any of us would normally think, isn't it? I mean, there's physical and mental anguish involved in a catastrophic accident. How the heck can you separate the two of them?
You shouldn't, and it ought not to be done, because people can be extremely disabled with certain psychological conditions when they're combined with the physical nature of their injuries.
So what you're saying really is this is a move to save a little bit more money.
It is. It
is. The bottom line is that, right?
It's pushing to put more profit into the insurance company's hands, and we think that it's going to offset the balance that ought to be there. Fair enough. There should be a control over premiums.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, insurance companies should be profitable. But at the same time, you have to get a return for the product that you're buying. Simply slashing the benefits down and down further, you're buying an umbrella that only opens halfway.
How has the slashing so far, if I may back up a bit, how has the slashing of the minor accident medical benefits gone? I mean, is there any way to measure its effectiveness, or whether or not it's working at a disadvantage to people who are involved in those more minor accidents and the coverage that they've been able to claim for? Do we notice anything yet?
Certainly, people who have, for instance, torn ligaments are now subject to only $3,500 in medical and rehabilitation care.
Yeah.
And $3,500, unfortunately, doesn't go a long way when people suffer these types of injuries. So they just simply exhaust their $3,500.
And then you're
and
done.
That's done.
Then you pay for it yourself, right?
The other thing is, I mean, if you look at some of the profitability of some of the Intact insurance, for instance, in its first quarter of this year, it was up $77 million, $179 million, compared to their first quarter in 2011. It's gone up.
Does that relate directly
47%.
To the decrease in the benefits paid out?
They certainly attribute a portion to the changes that happened in 2010.
Yeah, yeah.
The thing, too, is back in 2010, they also made a change where if you wanted to obtain treatment, you'd be assessed by a health professional, and they would allocate you a certain amount of physiotherapy treatment. And that would be paid unless the insurance company had you examined by perhaps another doctor that said that you didn't need it. Well, they changed that to the extent that they no longer have to have it reviewed by a medical professional, but they can simply deny the benefit. So right now we have about 30,000 what are called treatment plans that have been denied and are being disputed within the system, and they're backlogged by 12 months.
Yeah.
That's also a really, really big issue right now for a lot of people who want that treatment right away. I mean, most of the treatment is beneficial within the first month. A denial right off the bat means that person may have to wait 12 months before they get that therapy.
I suppose if this thing goes through, it means you and your colleagues will be spending a lot more time in a courtroom.
Right now, with 30,000 disputed mediations, that's where
already,
things are being forced.
Yeah, exactly. But in terms of the catastrophic situation as well, even more so, perhaps.
The idea was to simplify the process. Certainly, it was our understanding in 2010 that when they were going to review the catastrophic definition, they were going to expand it to allow more people to be deemed catastrophic.
Uh-huh.
They've gone completely the other way. And based on our review of this expert panel's recommendations, they've made the system even more complicated, which means more lawyers, more time in court, trying to figure these things out when people really need the services right away. And we're not talking the minor injuries. We're talking the traumatic brain injuries, people with spinal cord injuries, and more dramatic psychological and physical injuries.
I remember being involved in a personal injury accident that was catastrophic in BC a number of years ago. An elderly woman made a left turn in front of a motorcycle rider, and he was profoundly disabled, and she had $1 million worth of liability coverage. Well, and they took all of that, and then the lawyers came back and sued her for another $1.5 million, and she lost everything that she owned.
Yeah,
I just an example. I think of how much looking after someone for the rest of their lives, if they are that profoundly injured and disabled, how much that can really cost.
The care costing alone with individuals with catastrophic spinal cord disabilities, it can obviously be in the millions and well over $10 million in certain cases. So it is quite expensive to look after people with certain types of disabilities. But by having access to at least
at least
$2 million, it gives them some dignity and respect, and gives them some semblance of independence out there that they so much
All
need.
Right. Okay, it's 11:46. If you have a question for Pat Brown, who's here talking about these proposed changes, and in a few minutes we'll talk about how this process will play out. They're only proposed now. Will they actually be put into regulation? We'll talk about that as well. Here are the numbers to call to get involved in the conversation, 416-360-0740 or 866-740-4740.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Goldhawk Fights Back for You on AM 740 Zoomer Radio. Goldhawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740 Zoomer Radio.
Okay, we're talking to Pat Brown, who's a personal injury lawyer, about some changes, as we say, coming down the pipe at Queen's Park that will make it tougher to qualify for catastrophic accident coverage. That's essentially it, isn't it? Tougher to qualify. Now, where is it now, this idea, this proposal?
So the expert panel conducted its review.
Yeah.
That went to the superintendent of the Financial Services Commission of Ontario. He reviewed that, and he's more or less supporting the recommendations in that panel.
Uh-huh.
And that's now at the desk of Dwight Duncan as to whether or not he's going to do anything with it.
So Dwight Duncan and his office can say yay or nay to it, and a regulatory change will be made, and it, either it comes in or it's rejected.
That's right.
Or sent back maybe for further study. How can we best understand the changes that are there? I know insurance is a complicated business. I understand that. But by raising the threshold, making it harder to qualify for that kind of coverage, what are some of the things that are being suggested?
Well, they're looking at some changes to how people are deemed catastrophic when it comes down to a brain injury, for instance.
Yeah.
Previously, in the way it exists now, there's a scale called the Glasgow Coma Scale. It's a scale that's done, for instance, if an ambulance attendant or somebody in the trauma ward sees an individual and they do an assessment and they give a scoring of somebody's level of consciousness at the accident scene or just some time reasonable afterwards when they're being wheeled into the trauma ward. And they look at the eye movement, the motor response, as well as the body movements, and they give a score to the individual.
Yeah.
If that score is 9 or less, the person under the present legislation would be deemed catastrophic.
Right.
And that means that individual would then have access to a case manager to look after their rehabilitation. It would mean that they'd have attendant care up to $6,000 per month so somebody could come and care for that person with the brain injury. It would also mean that all of a sudden you can bring in the rehab team right away to have the benefit of cognitive rehabilitation for that person with the brain injury. So all that would flow right away as soon as you'd have a GCS score of 9 or below. They want to get rid of that. They want to
get rid of the whole scale?
That rating system. They don't think that it's a valid indicator of somebody's brain injury. And in all fairness, there are many people that say it's perhaps not the best indicator of the nature or extent of that brain injury. However, it at least allows a person to access those benefits right away.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to stress this point because it's so important. Even if somebody qualifies for those additional benefits, they have a GCS score of 7, let's say, but they get dramatically better later on, it doesn't mean they get those higher amounts of benefits. They still have to prove that they need them. So nobody's getting a windfall under the present system. But by taking that away, well, then we're looking at assessments 1 month down the line. For instance, a new system that they want to put in place means what's called a GOSE scoring, or Glasgow Outcome Scale Extended Scoring. And if you are in a vegetative state, then they can deem you catastrophic 1 month following the injury. So
the red tape that's being inserted into this, the hoops that will need to be jumped through are multiplying.
And it's going to leave those people with those traumatic brain injuries without the services they need right when they need them, which is in the 6 month or to the first year of their recovery. That's when they get the benefit of all that treatment.
Yeah.
That's when they can get better. That's when they can be more functioning or able to return to work. By putting all the red tape, more tests involved, more deadlines, it really means that those people will go without during the most important period of recovery.
And then there are those as well who may not be getting better. I'm assuming somebody could be denied catastrophic coverage and it may wind up that they are going to be somehow permanently disabled. What then?
That's right. So, for instance, there's the Alliance of Community Medical and Rehabilitation Providers. They've grouped together. They feel that these changes are going to reduce the number of catastrophic people by 30 to 40%. So all those individuals that otherwise would have had all the benefits to help them later on in life for independence, et cetera, will now be subject to the much lower amounts of $50,000, which only lasts till 10 years in any event.
These new regulations, these new proposals, how do they compare with similar coverage in other provinces?
Yeah, we do have a lucrative accident benefit system, so there are other jurisdictions within Canada that do have lower amounts of benefits available. That's certainly true.
So rather than raise everybody's, we will lower Ontario's. Is that what you're saying?
That's right. I think that's what they're saying. They want to lower the amount of benefits, whether it's the right or wrong thing to do. But there are other jurisdictions in Canada with different types of systems. We have a private system, so it's very difficult to compare it
to
certain other systems.
Once again, complicating the whole thing. Hard to compare it to ICBC. Yeah, exactly. Here's Warren on the line from Scarborough. Do you have a question about all of this, Warren?
Well, just a comment. You gentlemen just covered what I was going to speak to. If you don't get therapy right away or very soon after a catastrophic accident, the injury is going to get worse. And by the time you go for therapy, it's not going to do you any good. And maybe you're going to end up in a long care home or something like that.
Yeah.
It's going to put an extra burden on the hospital system.
Well, of course. Exactly.
So I don't see why the government's going to say, okay, insurance company, put more money in your pocket and let everybody else suffer. It doesn't make sense.
Well, in fact, the government's already done that once.
Yeah, well, I hope they don't do it again.
Yeah. I think you'd agree with that, wouldn't you, Pat?
I think it's a great point. The extra burden, as they reduce the benefits down to these amounts, the burden's going to be on the taxpayers of Ontario.
It's because just spread evenly amongst us all.
It's going to go into the public system.
Yeah.
So it's just, and meanwhile, we're seeing the profitability of these insurance companies rising.
Yeah. What is the time frame here? Have you been told? Do you and your colleagues know when this might happen? Is it like right away? Is it
the Ontario Trial Lawyers Association's understanding at this stage is that it's at the desk of Minister Duncan to look at as
to
a
specific. Yeah, but things can stay at desks for a long time, of course.
That's true, but we really haven't had, or at least from my knowledge, a concrete deadline of when this is going to be determined, if at all.
Is your group going to have an opportunity to appeal to or speak directly to Dwight Duncan and his people?
Certainly, the door there we're asking to be open at all times so that we can express to Minister Duncan just the gravity of this type of change on people with these types of disabilities, and to get the message through that if he makes these changes recommended by this expert panel, it's going to have such a significant and grave impact on so many people out there.
So the only let's go back a bit. The only reason that this coverage is changing is to save insurance companies some money. I mean, what else are we to assume?
Well, certainly if the changes are made, it's going to increase, we believe, the profitability of the insurance industry, which at this stage has a good profit margin already. So just simply putting more money in their hands, we think, is an unbalanced approach at this stage.
With these changes that came from the expert panel, was there also an indication that our premiums would go down? I mean, there was that indication there with the changes made in 2010. Are they saying that again, or are they just not even bothering to say that?
I think you just have to ask your listeners. Since September of 2010, when they slashed your benefits by about 72%, did you see a corresponding reduction in your premiums?
Well, I didn't in mine. I don't know about you and yours, Pat Brown. No, I don't think people have been calling in saying, holy mackerel, Goldhawk, look at my insurance premium this year. It's way down, because that hasn't happened, right?
It hasn't. I've actually had clients come in. They gave you what happened was after they reduced the benefit, they gave you the option of buying back up to the previous
amount.
In other
words, pay more money,
opt up and pay more. So some of them on their renewal policies, even though they were receiving half the benefits in certain categories, saw the exact same amount of premium on their renewal.
Yeah, so much for saving money, right?
Yeah.
Pat Brown, thank you very much for coming in and talking to us about this. We'll continue to follow this issue. Thanks very much for laying it out for us. Pat Brown is a past president of the Ontario Trial Lawyers Association. He's a personal injury lawyer at and partner at McLeish Orlando LLP.
Goldhawk Fights Back for You airs Monday to Friday, 11 to 1 on AM 740, Zoomer Radio.